divided time, so we got diverse opinions. Ain't nothing scripted, no intermission, let's get the business. Touch any topic that ain't a subject that is off limits. You better listen, this black and yellow, Alex and Jimmy.
Black and yellow, black, black and yellow, black and yellow, black, black and yellow.
And welcome back to the Black and Yellow Fantasy Football Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jimmy Long, and my buddy Alex Sproles on the end of the line. What's up, Alex? How's it going?
Oh, nothing much. Just hanging out, watching some Duke basketball for the first time this year in a hotel room in Portland, Maine. So life's not bad.
There you go. Yeah, it's daylight savings. So, you know, that means we are 2 weeks late bringing you a new podcast, but that's all good. that's how
it
works,
we doubled
right?
up the last time. We knew this might happen.
Let's jump right into it because we have a full load of things to talk about. Let's start with week nine. Scores over here, Alex. On Thursday night, Jimmy Garoppolo fucking showed out against the Cardinals, threw four touchdowns, and the Niners are still undefeated, the only undefeated team at this moment. Almost let the Cardinals come back in that game. Do you have anything?
Yeah,
to talk about the
Cardinals traded for Kenyon Drake earlier in the week, the Miami fire sale. Since
I can't believe he played.
They're tanking for Tua. I mean, you know, how much of a playbook does a running back really need to know? It's like run to the open places. It's not that complicated.
I suppose. Yeah.
Unless you're going to use them in a bunch of passing packages, which
blocking
I don't even
schemes.
Think.
Sure.
Yeah. Which I don't even think Arizona has a ton of because Kyler makes most of his throws within like the first, 3.5 seconds of the ball being snapped.
Yeah.
You know, which is all, it's like an extension of the running game kind of thing. But regardless, you know, he showed out and kind of kept Arizona in the game. 15 carries, 110 yards, and a touchdown. But this was the Jimmy G game. I think there had been, you know, even though San Francisco is undefeated, there had been some questions in terms of, like, how much of that success was in spite of or due to Garoppolo. Like, was he really just not doing anything to make them worse, or was he actively making them better? And I think in this game, he actively made them better. It proved why you need a quarterback like that for situations where maybe – your defense can't hold the day and your running game isn't where you want it to be, which is a lot like sort of how that Atlanta team that Mike Shanahan was the offensive coordinator for operated back in the day. You know, Matt Ryan could have a 300-yard passing game, but it was much more on the back of a Tevin Coleman and a Devontae Freeman, which is why their collapse in the Super Bowl made no sense because they went away from everything that made them successful.
Exactly. Yeah, and Jimmy G just looked great. You're right. And he even felt so good that he decided he was going to hit on Aaron Andrews at the end. Good for him.
Shoot your shot, man. If you look like that, I'd be hitting on Aaron Andrews, too.
Yeah, that's the one guy who can do it. All right, let's move on to the Sunday games. Bears going down to the Eagles, 22-14 there. Who cares about the Eagles? I think everything was more about how inept the Bears' offense looked that entire game. I mean, they're going to stick with Trubisky,
There was one point in the first half where they had more first downs than positive yardage. But the reason that's notable is because the number of first downs was zero and the positive yards were -2. So, yeah, they were doing great. They were doing fantastic.
I think he was averaging like 1.6 inches per attempt or something like that when it was broken
down. How much
down.
Must... You know, side note, how much must it suck to be Allen Robinson, the wide receiver for the Bears? Like, you leave Jacksonville to get away from Blake Bortles and, like, finally spread your wings as an elite wide receiver. Everybody knows you're talented. You get to Chicago, they seem like they're on the up and up, and you get a bunch of Mitchell Trubisky thrown directly in your face.
Yeah, that's kind
just of a big old Mitch right on your chest.
Not just for Robinson, but the rest of the locker room, the Bears team, because that's a stacked
Bears team. It's deflating.
They're really good players in there. They should not be going through things that the Dolphins are going through right now or the Jaguars are going through right now. I mean, they should be winning these games. And they,
I mean, you have a defense that's largely unchanged from last year that's performing almost, you know, a full touchdown worse. And I think part of that is what you're talking about. There's just a deflating feeling when you know your quarterback just can't get it done and you're going to have to win the day with turnovers, which are not always guaranteed when you're playing good teams or people know your schemes.
Absolutely. All right, let's see what they can do about that. They're 3-5. That's a tough division, too. I mean, they got the Packers and the Vikings in there. Moving on, we got the Texans, Jaguars. Deshaun Watson just all over the Jags defense, 26-3 in this game. And it took place in London, right?
Yeah, this was the home game for the Jaguars. London getting a lot of play this week, what with the rumors of the Chargers moving there, the Jaguars playing there, and Shad Khan talking about how much he hates playing in Jacksonville. So there's rumors. London, sexy girl of the week. But regardless, this was not a good game to watch if you got up early for it. It was over pretty quickly. The Jaguars have been performing at or near average for most of the season, and I think the Minshew mania has finally come to a merciful halt as we got news today that Nick Foles is going to get his starting job back when he comes back after their bye. Big Dick Nick didn't lose any shine in his time out with the broken clavicle. So, yeah, that experiment's over. It was fun while it lasted. We'll always remember you, Uncle Rico. And if you're the Texans, you know, this is a big win for you in the division, especially since the Colts, which we'll get to in a second, lost to my Steelers. So now you're in first place in the division and in a pretty weak AFC. So if you can get home field advantage or the third seed and you can avoid playing in New England or Kansas City, you're in pretty good shape.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. All right, moving on from that, we got the Redskins obviously losing to the Bills. I don't know what else to say about that. Redskins.
This is one of those games that, like, you'll see the score and you'll be like, oh, the Bills won like they should have, but it really
doesn't tell you anything.
Told you nothing about either team. Like, if you were looking for a referendum on what Dwayne Haskins is going to be, this was a bad sample for it. And if you're trying to figure out if the Bills are good or not, this is bad for it. So you learn nothing.
We're going
to
circle back to the Redskins in a different fashion in our next segment. All right, moving on. The Vikings going down to the Chiefs. Matt Moore coming back on that game. Terrible loss for the Vikings. I mean, talk about a golden opportunity for them to, you know, get a win with Patrick Mahomes out.
Yeah, and if you're the Vikings, you're on the flip side of that coin as far as playoff scenarios, because the NFC is a lot more competitive than the AFC is right now. So you're a 6-3 Vikings team that's in danger of missing the playoffs because A, you're not in first place in your division. That's the Packers. And B, there's like two or three other 6-win teams that are in front of you in the wild card spot. So you needed to have this game. Granted, they did lose on a last second Harrison Butker 54-yard field goal. So it wasn't for lack of trying. It's just that if you had to get one in Kansas City, no Patrick Mahomes, you're in the game, even though your offense isn't playing like it had been with their hair on fire the last couple of weeks. You know, you have no Thielen, but you're still in it, and then you fall anyway. It's the most Vikings thing, but then also still disappointing somehow, which is also a very Vikings thing. So I don't know how to feel about it. I'm sure Ryan has some thoughts that I'm not going to listen to.
For sure. Yeah. And I think the highlight of the game was Damon Williams breaking out for like a 91-yard touchdown and Tyreek Hill catching up to everybody, including
Tyreek Hill passing the guys who were chasing his teammates just because, according to him, he was trying to prove that he was the fastest guy on the team.
I think he proved that he's the fastest guy in the league. 22 miles per hour is his top speed. Back in my days in high school, you know, I ran 21 miles per hour, so he's definitely faster than me. Just kidding. I might be able to like reach like maybe like 11 miles per hour. I think
there's videos of maybe it's Chad Johnson doing like 20 on a treadmill, and it's insanely, it's way faster than you think it is.
Yeah. It did look that fast on just regular video camera there. All right, moving on. Jets, Dolphins didn't have to do this, but they did it anyways. Get a win here, 26-18 over. Gosh, how sad are the Jets?
If you're a Dolphins fan, you're perpetually unhappy. But as far as this result specifically, are you mad or are you excited? Because I know nobody wants to go winless, but it's also like this team's terrible and we know it's terrible. So why not just be as terrible as possible? You're a process veteran. So how are we supposed to feel about this?
I would not be excited about that because now you have the Jets at 1-7. And I don't know what the Bengals record is, but
Bengals are still winless.
Bengals are still winless. Not great.
There was a chance that we would have had, because the Bengals play the Dolphins at the end of the season. There was a chance that could have been the 0-14 bowl, but now that dream is shattered because the Jets are inept and terrible at what they do.
I don't like it. Yeah, if I'm a Dolphins fan, I'm not too happy. I'm not too pleased about this. But the guys in the locker room and the coaches, Brian Flores, they don't give a shit about what everybody else wants. They just want
clearly,
to win.
Clearly, Flores got a Gatorade bath.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, 3 touchdowns. It's the Ryan Fitzpatrick that we know. Good some games, really terrible for like 5 or 6 games.
Yeah, and part of the sacrifice that Miami made to win this game, 2 of those touchdowns were rookie wide receiver Preston Williams, who immediately left the game right after that with a knee injury that's going to sideline him for the rest of the season. So even when things go well for the Dolphins, they go terribly.
It's like the Hunger Games. Like, they have it all set up. You know, if you do too well, we're going to take you out. Make sure you don't repeat that.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You can't fuck up this Tua money. Let's be real.
Next up, we have your team sneaking out a win against the Colts, 26-24 Steelers over Colts. It's a game where, you know, Jacoby Brissett looking good as he's looked the entire season and going down with an ankle injury. I think Quentin Nelson, you know, stepped on his ankle going backwards. Yeah, Brian Hoyer came in, did a lot of things, including throwing a 96-yard pick six. Mason Rudolph, he had some moments, but he still looks pretty uncomfortable.
Listen,
out there.
Mason Rudolph is the definition of a average backup level quarterback in this league. You can survive with him, but you'll never win anything because of or in spite of Mason Rudolph. He's just kind of there, which is why my expectations for this team, while low, we're not ever going to be like, oh, you know, if they, you know, they're 4-4 now, it's like, are you going to get excited about it? No, because we don't have anything resembling a confident quarterback coming back. So it's like, nobody's afraid of Mason Rudolph.
Yeah, he's just not, he doesn't look confident unless he's throwing to Jalen Samuels. Right. I think they went like 13-for-13 in that game. All short passes, but who cares? That equal to, you know, I don't know, 130 yards. That's a great win for the Steelers. You guys are 4-4 now. That Minkah Fitzpatrick trade looks fucking terrific, and I always stand by that. You know, I think if you know that you're getting a good player, you're getting a star, difference maker, why not give up, you know, a first rounder? Who cares? You never know what you're going to get in the draft.
Yeah, we've talked about this a lot and how there's an overvaluing of draft picks in terms of what they could be, because they could be anything. It's like that old Family Guy joke where it's like, you could take the trip or the boat that's in one box, or you can take the mystery box. And it's like, well, yeah, the boat's a boat, but the mystery box could be anything. It could even be a boat. It's like, okay, yeah, you know, it could be anything, but you could just take what you know, don't leave a gift horse in the mouth, just take what you can get, that kind of thing. So you can look at it that way, but the Steelers still had to win to make that draft pick quote unquote worthless. Because if it was a top five pick, then you're looking at abject disaster in terms of just giving it away for somebody who might not even be on the team next year.
Yeah,
sure. I don't know.
Speaking of but gifts, you know, Adam Vinatieri gave you guys one there. Missing.
I was just about to say the real story from this game is the continued decline of the once venerable Adam Vinatieri, who is let age seep in not just in his beard but into his bones as he's forgotten how to kick a little bit.
Fucking tragic. All right, moving on.
Missed like 8 kicks, man. That's crazy.
It's not good. Some extra points there. We got the Panthers over the Titans 30-20. Kyle Allen, one of the 3 Allens this week to get a victory, including obviously Josh Allen and Brandon Allen, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you watch this game? Do you have anything to talk about? Christian McCaffrey doing his thing.
This offense really runs around Christian McCaffrey. So if he gets hurt, their dreams are truly dashed over and dead. But, you know, Kyle Allen, I think, does just enough to sort of keep them in it. He makes throws when he really has to and keeps the defense honest. The Panthers defense is, I think, above average, not great. You know, their secondary has some issues, but they really do get pressure up front with 18 different defensive ends that are 10 sack capable. For the Titans side, you know, it's just another ho-hum kind of Titans day, you know. Things happened. I don't remember what they were. They did some stuff. I never expected them to win, and then the game was over. It's just kind of what it is.
As far as fantasy goes, if you draft a McCaffrey, he is going to win you your league. This is the year that you ride him all the fucking way, right? It's just one of those performances.
Which means he'll probably inevitably get hurt in like week 15.
Woo, you heard it here first. he's got to be like in the white running back Hall of Fame already.
Already.
He's in there. It's him.
But then again, that Hall of Fame's got what, like three people in it?
Peyton Hillis.
Peyton Hillis for getting a Madden cover.
A lot of guys from the 50s.
There's a lot of halfbacks.
Yeah.
It's really just a closet with a couple of shelves. So he's, not breaking much new ground here, but still an accomplishment.
All right, let's take a look at some of the Gruden grinders here. Raiders over Lions. Raiders 4-4, beating the Lions 31-24 in this game. I didn't exactly watch it, but that sounds like exactly what the score should be from these two playing each other. Did you catch any of this game at all?
No, this was, I believe, on the West Coast, so restricted from my viewing capacity. And I wouldn't have wanted to watch it anyway, so that's all well and good. The universe was doing me a favor.
Stafford threw for 400 yards, 3 touchdowns. It's a monster day.
And lost. Yeah, that sounds like a very Stafford thing to do.
Josh Jacobs, the rookie for Oakland, carried the ball 28 times for 120 yards and 2 touchdowns.
And that sounds like the formula for an Oakland win is Derek Carr does not have to do a whole lot. Even though he did throw the winning touchdown pass, I think the formula for Oakland's success is getting behind that gigantic 3,000-pound offensive line and running the crap out of the football and keeping the pressure off of Derek Carr. And it's worked pretty well this season. I mean, this was their first home game in 6 weeks.
Awesome. Good for them. Guess what? Those Alabama running backs? Yeah, go ahead and draft them. They're pretty good.
They're pretty good. Mark Ingram, Josh Jacobs, not except for Trent Richardson, has been a pretty stellar track record.
Yeah, that guy has a eating disorder. Okay. Let's move on.
Him and Eddie Lacy? I don't know, man. Might be something in the water down there.
Yeah, it's hot dogs in the water. All right. Moving on. Moving on to our next game. We have the Seahawks, an MVP favorite over here, Russell Wilson. Just phenomenal game against the Buccaneers, winning 40-34 there. Coming back, right? I think the Bucs were up 14-7 after the first quarter. So good for Russell. He threw for 5
Seattle's
touchdowns.
Seattle's defense kind of sneaky bad.
Not that great. They're kind of porous.
It makes sense. They're in the middle of a kind of transition period from the Legion of Boom Aaron to whatever they're going to be moving into the future. So people have to grow into whatever roles they're going to be thrust into, and they're making a lot of trades and there's moving pieces, whatever. But I think a lot of this Russell Wilson MVP hype, while warranted because he's played amazing, is a function of the fact that he has to do so much to keep them in games week to week.
He's so good. I mean, as opposed to Mitchell Trubisky, like, the balls that he throws, like, oh my gosh, those sideline throws, they're so perfectly placed. It's unbelievable. It's beautiful.
I think I heard something today that on passes just to Tyler Lockett this season, he's got a completion percentage of like 87.
Yeah. It's like above 80%. It's
ridiculous.
Yeah, and Tyler Lockett is not a slot guy. Like, Tyler Lockett is a, 25 yards down the field kind of guy.
He's a burner guy.
Yeah. He might be the heir apparent. Like, we always compare him to Drew Brees, obviously. Stature, his throwing motion, the way he throws. But the combination of him and Pete Carroll, they could be the perennial, heir apparents to Belichick and Brady. I think they could really be special going forward. They already are, but kind of dominant,
And they have, in a way, something that Brady and Belichick never had, in that the relationship is kind of, there's a trust built into it, in that Pete sort of, I don't want to say took Russell's side, but when it came down to the defense versus the quarterback, he sided with the quarterback at the end of the day. I don't think Belichick has ever done that in the history of ever.
I think Belichick is Vader, and Brady's like, I think Belichick is the Emperor, is Palpatine, and Brady's Vader, while on the other side you got Pete Carroll's more like Obi-Wan and Russell is more like Luke. So
there's a little bit of an added loyalty there. That...
versus dark, yeah, kind of deal.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Browns are going to Browns, baby. Holy shit. Browns go down two. They're 2-6 in the season to the sorry-ass Denver Broncos, 24-19. What an abject disaster.
It's, I don't know. It's hard to really be upset because it's our own fault for putting these kind of it's like when you put out a bowl of candy for Halloween because we're topical on this show, and then you're surprised when it's all gone after 5 minutes because nobody just took one. It's like we put these expectations on the Browns unfairly, and then now are disappointed that they were not met. It's like, that's our fault. You know what I mean? We should have known better than to think that they were going to be Super Bowl contenders and needed 80-1 odds or whatever the fuck the crazy Vegas handicappers were doing to get money on the Browns. It's hard for me to sit here and be like, oh, well, they did this and they didn't do that. Like we knew who they were. This is our fault.
I think collectively as a people, there are certain things we need to work on. We need to pay teachers better. We need to work on, working on our gas emissions, CO2 emissions, and we also need to work on our expectations for the Browns and what Baker Mayfield could or may be or might look like after the press conference. Tough. The memes came out. Twitter was not kind to him. The internet is not usually kind to him. I will say we do have a little group text here, Chain, and we kind of went off on him a little bit. is this the right platform for us to share some of these, just observations that we had? And if you haven't seen this picture, it's Baker Mayfield, mustache, overcoat on, and he doesn't look all too pleased on the post-game conference.
We'll tell you what he looks like in a second because we've got a long list of things that will bring an image to your brain and sort of paint the picture with words.
Okay, do you want to go one by one? I'll do one, you do the other?
Yeah, so he looks like one of the sticky bandits from Home Alone.
He does indeed. He looks like the drug dealer in the 80s PSA who also moonlights as the child molester in the 80s PSA. So, you know, basically the same actor.
The same guy. He looks like a street hustler who sells you a necklace and it turns your skin green. He kind of looks like a divorced dad at a Chuck E. Cheese using the last of his paycheck to buy beer instead of pizza.
Yeah, he does. He looks like Vincent Adultman with a fake mustache. So if you don't know who that is, go check out BoJack Horseman.
He kind of looks like the guy who would be on the Hall of Fame wall at a strip club called the Peppermint Hippo.
Yep. He looks like John Cusack and Say Anything.
Just Boy Dobler, baby. He looks like a guy who has bootleg DVDs of Spider-Verse 2, but they're in Farsi in the trunk of his car.
He looks like a 28-year-old that looks like he's 38, but definitely dates an 18-year-old.
Only dates 18-year-olds. He looks like the kind of guy who regularly spends every Christmas at the same Applebee's getting hammered on mudslides.
He looks like a guy who you'll find on the other side of that glory hole.
Ha! Oh, boy. He kind of looks like a homeless assassin from John Wick.
Yeah, he looks like Jason Mendoza's last successful brother.
Yeah, like a guy who raises pigeons but then also eats the pigeons.
Yeah, for sure. He looks like a real-life grumpy cat.
He looks like a private investigator who fucks every single one of his clients, male and female.
Yeah, he looks like a guy who just realized that tie hooker he had a penis.
Oof. And it was a big penis, too. He kinda, and I'm just saying kinda, looks like a gym teacher.
Yeah, he does. He looks like a guy who might get caught peeping into the Curves locker room.
He kind of looks like a guy who's tried to start a Hall & Oates cover band, but nobody took him up on being Oates.
He looks like a blue belt in karate that once again got passed up for a green belt. So still blue belt.
He looks like the kind of guy who has a girl named Destiny on his speed dial.
He looks like a guy.
Cell phone and home phone.
He looks like a guy who goes to the movie theater by himself and sits right next to you, even though there's plenty of seats and the whole theater is empty. It's just you and him, and he sits right next to you and takes that fucking armrest.
He looks like the kind of guy that goes to a high school baseball game with his own speed gun, but he doesn't have a kid playing in the game.
He looks like the kind of guy who drives a Crown Vic because it's a cop car. That's the only reason.
He looks like he's about to coach the Bad News Bears.
Nice. I love that one. He looks like a gym teacher who's ready for school to be over because has a case of Natty Light waiting for him in the fridge.
He looks like the kind of guy that would move to Cleveland because it's a big city.
Yeah. All right, let's end on that one. That was pretty good. We here at Black and Yellow do not condone cyberbullying. But, you know, when it comes to...
Yeah, he'll live. He's got a hot girlfriend. He'll live. He'll be fine.
All right, back to scores. We still haven't finished those. Chargers over Packers, 26-11. Wow.
Surprise of the day.
What happened to the Packers offense? Go figure. Good game for the Chargers. They needed this.
I mean, this is the Chargers we get every year. You know, they start 1-6, 2-5, 3-4, whatever it is. They underwhelm to start the season after Super Bowl expectations. They make a run to sort of either get in the playoffs or just miss the playoffs at the end of the season, tantalize us all, and then fall short by the time winning time comes around. I'm not falling for it again this year. I'm not going to do it. I'm not falling into that hole.
Yeah, I'm not either. So let's not hold our breaths. I think the Packers at 7-2 are still pretty good.
I think it was an impressive win. I don't think it means anything.
Nope. Sunday night, what a fucking game. Ravens-Patriots. The Ravens' Lamar Jackson punched the bully of the league in the fucking mouth. Ravens 37, Patriots 20.
Continuing the trend of Bill Belichick having some degree of difficulty handling quarterbacks who can do more than stand in the pocket and pass. And I don't want to make it seem like he can't figure it out. I just think that, like everyone else who's played the Ravens this year, it's hard to account for a guy that can basically make any play that's fallen apart into a successful one with his legs. And there's nothing you can really do about it.
You're right about
that. Because you can't cover him with a linebacker or a DN. And if you commit a spy to him from the secondary, then he'll just throw a pass over the top of you, which he's more than capable of doing, even though it's not like, you know, passing is his strong suit or anything.
Right. And I think there's something to be said about the fact that, you know, Belichick often takes advantage of lesser coaches and, you know, inexperienced quarterbacks. There are certain coaches that have given him trouble, and one of them is John Harbaugh. Even with Joe Flacco, he's time after time, he goes toe-to-toe with Belichick, including the playoffs, when it actually matters, so... give John Harbaugh all the money. He deserves it.
Yeah, you know, we remember that playoff win from a while ago. I think it was 41-7. The Ravens ended up beating the Patriots. Really? That was the game where Ray Rice went off and had like two consecutive 70-yard runs. So the Ravens have always not really feared the Patriots in the way that the rest of the league seems to clench up their buttholes when they play in Foxborough. Now, that's not me saying that I think if they play again in February, it's going to be the same result. I don't think the Patriots showed all their cards in this game by design, and I don't think that the Ravens have as good of a team as that score might indicate, you know, beating the best defense in the league 37-20. Ravens' offense is not that good. I saw it up close and personal when they played the Steelers. It's not that good, and their secondary is worse. So if Brady really has to throw for 500 yards, I'm pretty sure he'd be more than capable of doing it. He just didn't feel like doing it in a meaningless game in late October. I get it.
I do love that Ravens run offense. I think they have the best running game in the league with, you know, obviously Lamar Jackson is the best running back on that team. Don't get it twisted. And
they're the analytics team of football. That's what they are. They're like the Warriors looked at it and said, a three is worth more than two, so we're going to take more threes. The Ravens said, we have 18 running backs on our roster. We're just going to run it all the time.
Yeah, Mark Ingram, Gus Edwards, those guys have been doing some work. Mark Ingram, man, he looks like he is, you know, back in his Alabama days. Just looks terrific. All right, Final game Monday night. The Cowboys beat the Giants 37-18. Looked like the Giants might have been able to pull this out. They had the lead early, and they let this one slip away. Danny Jones, towards the end of the game, looked uncomfortable. The Cowboys did just enough to not give this one away. I don't know if we can, make any conclusions out of this game. I mean, the Cowboys should have beaten them anyways, right?
I mean, the biggest thing out of this game is that somebody's got to sign Salem the Cat to a contract through the end of the season. For anybody that missed it, about halfway through, I guess, the second quarter, a black cat made its way onto the field in the Meadowlands and interrupted play for a solid, 2 to 3 minutes as just kind of meandered its way around the field. And it was basically the highlight of the game. Nobody was talking about anything else on social media. So that tells you what you need to know about the quality of play. If you're the Cowboys, I think you worry about the fact that you still haven't really gotten a great Zeke game this season. And also, you really didn't fix anything that was broken as far as taking chances with your quarterback. Most of the yards Dak Prescott threw for were the result of yards after the catch, not him throwing downfield. And, you know, we talked about Russell Wilson's completion percentage on throws down the field. Dak Prescott, I think, has the worst completion percentage on throws more than 25 yards down the field at 35.
It's bad. Yeah.
So, yeah, the Cowboys still have their fair share of issues to figure out, and the Eagles are hot on their tail. And what we thought was going to be a division that's maybe sent three teams to the playoffs might only send one. So that's going to be interesting. And if you're the Giants, it's just you knew what this was. So yeah. What do we really have to talk about here? Daniel Jones is a rookie quarterback that you started three games into the season. He's going to turn it over a lot. Your defense isn't very good, so you're going to get scored on a lot. It's it is what it is.
Yeah, Daniel Jones looking more like his dad, Eli Manning, every day, which is great for me. But in any case, that's week 9. Let's move on to week 10, but not before we take a quick look at the standings in our fantasy football league. That's the Justice League. And to everybody's surprise, check out this underdog. What's my draft? Brittany Hillman up at the very top, number one, with 139.9 points. 1 point, or half a point ahead of Ryan Linke's team, the Jackson 5 touchdown. And really, we have a bunch of teams that are 6-3. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams, including yours truly. And Alex, where are you here? I'm looking
down.
I gotta keep going down, huh?
Oh yeah, we gotta keep going down. One game out of the playoffs right now at 4-5. You can suck on my nuts. I don't appreciate you slandering me. I don't appreciate you trying to lord your record or record shame me. So how about you keep it to yourself? How's that sound?
I'll keep it to myself. I will say something. You have four games. We have four games to go in the regular season before the playoffs. And you got Patrick Mahomes back. So things are looking up for you. Everything's coming up, Milhouse.
And I got a couple of trade chips in my back pocket.
Yeah. What are you going to do? So you have three quarterbacks in your roster right now.
You have,
in addition to Patrick Mahomes, you have Derek Carr, Andrew Brees. Would you be willing to part with one of those quarterbacks? Because this is the biggest bye week. Apparently, there are 6 teams on bye this week.
There are.
Including the Patriots, the Eagles. So this is kind of the week to make your move, right? And get the most out of it. People are going to be the most desperate.
Trust me. I'm looking around. I'm shopping some things and making sure I know what's what. Because, you know, there's also the possibility that Mahomes comes back and is not Mahomes. So do I want to keep at least one of those guys as an insurance policy for not making the playoffs? But, hey, we'll see what happens.
Look at what Matt Moore is doing with that offense. You know, Tyreek Hill, still Tyreek Hill, if not better. I think there's very little chance that Patrick Mahomes isn't, as productive as he was before he got out.
Yeah, I think that too. I'm just telling you what my thought process is.
Okay. All right. I'm just saying, if you have any decent options out there, I think maybe you should take it. Maybe you should pull the trigger on that one.
Yeah, it sounds like you have some inside information, but
no
that would be
whatsoever.
That would be tampering to discuss it here on the podcast.
Okay. All right. Let's move on from that. What do we want to talk about? Do we want to go into week 10?
No, not yet. It's too early. It's too early.
Too early for week 10. This is Tuesday after all. All right. So we have something special for you guys. You know, this is the year that we saw one of the greatest games ever played. And by that, I mean the conclusion of the Marvel Cinematic Universe with Avengers Endgame, one of the greatest battles we've ever seen. And from that, I thought it was kind of a missed opportunity for us not to pick our all MCU team. And we're going to try to review this unit by unit, week by week. And first up, we have the special teams. Alex, who's our place kicker?
So this was easy, I think. And no-brainer.
No-brainer.
Hawkeye is the place kicker.
He's Justin Tucker.
Yeah, the guy would not miss. So all you got to do really is teach him how to kick, which doesn't seem that hard, honestly. Take a couple steps and you do it. I realize I'm setting myself up to look like an asshole by saying that. But, you know, he's a highly trained assassin. I'm pretty sure he can figure it out. The guy retired from the Avengers, first of all, is one of the only actual human normie members of a superhero team, and it's consistently shown to be the most important. Every time he doesn't show up, guess what happens? They fucking lose. And every time he shows up, guess what happens?
They win.
He retired from the Avengers, took up golf, shot apparently 18 out of 18, which is insane. That means he has a handicap of like 600 yards because he was bombing admirals on par five. So I don't even know what's going on there. But clearly this guy's an athletic god and should be trusted with the most intense of situations that require aim, patience, strength, all that kind of stuff.
And everybody hates him anyways. But
exactly.
Obviously,
so
completely.
If he misses, then they'll continue to hate him and he won't care.
All right. That was a no-brainer. That was a unanimous choice. Next up, we have our all MCU punter, and that's Heimdall from Thor. You know, the gatekeeper of the Frostbite, who even under duress, right, with fucking after battling Thanos in the opening scene of Infinity War, it's half dead and just punts the Hulk across the galaxy
with insane accuracy right into Doctor Strange's house, like through the window, yeah. Not the front door,
nope.
Not side of the roof, like right through the circular window into the spot so that he doesn't crash on top of anybody.
He can send you through dimensions, through galaxies, through worlds.
Excellent coffin corner punt, which is especially funny considering he immediately went to a coffin right after.
Look, man, when you're punting on the game, right, just like in Thor Ragnarok when, you know, oh, you know what, Asgard, maybe we should just punt on that and let Hela have it, and we'll take the people with us. That's when you call Heimdall, right? Like, he's the guy for that. So if you're trying to switch positions, field, or just your home if you're an Asgardian in general, Heimdall's your guy. All right, next
so,
up, who's our snapper?
Long snapper, this was easy. Thanos, the guy snaps. Done.
I mean, certain people have snapped. The Hulk has snapped. You know, obviously, Tony has snapped. But the snapper, who's the long snapper? It's Thanos.
Long distance, long term. I mean, his snap lasted the longest. He snapped the most things. He has the most experience with snapping. According to Gamora, he's been on this snap kick since he was a wee lad, so I'm sure he's got the practice.
Nice. All right. Gunner over here, we have Natasha Romanoff. She'll sacrifice her body and soul blindly for the cause, even if she doesn't know if the fucking play is going to work out.
If you're making a wedge for your returner, you got to have somebody in there that's willing to sacrifice the body. And we know Natasha will just throw herself off a cliff for the team. So it's very clear what position we need to put her in.
All right, and last but not least, in our special teams for the All MCU team, we have the punt kick returner here. Alex, explain to us.
I mean, I don't know how you don't make this Ant-Man.
Woo!
The guy shrinks; you can't find him. He runs in every single punt return, or you make him go big into Giant Man style, and he takes two steps and he's in the end zone. You can't tackle him; he'll just step on you and kill you. So I don't understand how anybody else wouldn't be the choice here.
And after the snap, obviously half of the universe return, But who returned before all those people returned? From the quantum realm, Scott Lang. And if it wasn't for him, nobody else would return. He's a returner.
I'll be honest with you. It was either this or Devin Hester, and it came real close, but the suit put Lang over the edge. Now, yeah. If you give Devin Hester an Ant-Man suit, now we're really talking.
Devin Hester, so much faster than Scott Lang.
That's so much faster than most people. He's faster than Captain America, I would wager.
All right. I don't know if you're the audience for this, if we did this correctly or not. Let us know what you think about our special teams MCU. We're going to bring you offense and defense in the coming weeks. But yeah, that's what we have. And next up, we have another fun little experiment that we're making, and it's called fictional coaching hires due to the fact that our very own Jay Gruden was fired from the Washington Redskins. And
we had our first coach fired, so now we're allowed to talk about it.
We thought, why not replace him? Who would be the most suitable person to replace him from a fictional standpoint? Movies, TV, books. And Alex, who do we have?
We had some back and forth on this. You know, we've got a lot of good options in terms of fictional coaches. There's the guy from Rudy. There's Gene Hackman in both The Replacements and Hoosiers. You've got Denzel in Remember the Titans. But when we thought about the Redskins, or, if you want to be politically correct, the team from Washington.
And Dan Snyder,
and just their history in terms of the coaches they hire and the things they do, trying to make themselves successful for the first time since 1989. It's almost always the splashy hire. It's the reputation without results. It's
the big name.
This guy's won 14 district titles in a row. So the clear choice was Coach Bald Kilmer, played by John Voight in Varsity Blues.
Yeah, baby. Yeah,
if you're not familiar, Bud Kilmer won 22 district championships, 2 state titles in 35 years.
What a career.
He had a statue. He had a statue in front of a high school, which is not cheap, ladies and gentlemen. The school board had to approve that expenditure of brass and metal.
Apparently the statue was too heavy to even remove it.
Yeah. Before he retired, okay, he got the Joe Pa treatment minus the sexual assault and death from cancer before he actually left the school. Now, that's not to say this man is not without his warts, but if you're looking for splashy results aimed higher, look no further. I think that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I think Bud Kilmer was also like currently like 79 years old, so probably a terrible hire. Like you said, big name, but not a player's coach, as we seen before he retired.
I don't want your life.
And concussion protocol be damned.
Listen, we're
everybody
in a different
getting
world.
Back in the field.
We're in a different world than the one Coach Kilmer grew up in. We know about CTE and concussions now. We're much more well informed about the head trauma inflicted by football. His decision to play Billy Bob in the championship, despite what we now know to be the worst CTE in the history of people, would not go over well with the blogosphere. Jeremiah Whitehead just got cut for tweeting something offensive. If you do something bad, your ass is truly grass. So you wouldn't be able to send, Jordan Reed back out there with a concussion and get away with it. I'm not sure that's how this would roll. Coach Kilmer would be fired within the afternoon.
Yeah, record-breaking 22 district championships. Also another record, 45 straight weeks of just blank injury reports until Lance Harbor got his knee fucking capped. The guy's just everybody plays, man.
You're he sets up, and the way he runs his mouth, I think he sets his players up to sort of be retributed upon. I think a lot of people take exception to the ways in which he goes about winning, and that in turn becomes punishment for his players. So, yeah, not a player's guy, a Tom Coughlin devotee, if there ever was one.
Yeah, he's losing their locker room real fast because these are high
big,
school kids.
But a big Trump guy, so the owners would definitely love him.
Yeah, he fits right in. Okay, hope you guys like that. Fictional coaching hires. I'm sure as we progress through the week, We're coming up here in week 10, so I'm sure
there
can be some more coaching vacancies.
He hasn't gotten fired yet, but Dan Quinn is going to get fired, so we'll probably do Atlanta next.
Dan Quinn's getting fired. Adam Gase, that's not looking great over there. We got
Freddie Soup Kitchens not looking like he's going to last the season.
I'm surprised he's still on it, but we'll see about that.
Not quite sure how he got the job in the first place, so that's a whole other discussion.
Alex, you want to do week 10?
Yeah, okay, I'm ready now. We can do it.
All right, let's do it. Let's do Road Dogs. We're going to go through the schedule over here. The Los Angeles Chargers at the Oakland Raiders. The Raiders are a one-point dog at home. The Kansas City Chiefs at the Tennessee Titans. Titans are getting 3.5 points from Vegas. The Buffalo Bills at Cleveland Browns. The Browns are a three-point favorite at home. The Arizona Cardinals at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Bucks are 4.5-point favorite. Giants at Jets, the battle for Gotham. The Jets, the sorry-ass Jets, are getting 2.5 points. The Falcons at the Saints. New Orleans, 12-point favorite at home. Baltimore Ravens at the Bengals, and this is the Bengals without Andy Dalton and starting Ryan Finley from NC State. The Bengals are getting 10 points there. Getting spotted that. You want to do the other games?
Yeah, let's go with the – would you just do Lions at Bears, or did I hear that wrong?
Nope, that's the next one.
Okay, yeah, the Lions at the Bears in a divisional matchup. Bears are 2.5-point favorites at home. You know, it is what it is. Can't even get a 3-point favorite when Mitch Trubisky's your quarterback. The Dolphins, fresh off their first win of the season, are at the Indianapolis Colts, who will probably be starting Brian Hoyer in this game. But Vegas still gave it a line. Colts favored by 10.5.
Well, they're saying Jacoby might play. Brissett might play.
Yeah, he sprained his MCL. He's day-to-day. They're unsure of what his status will be come Sunday, but he is planning on practicing this week from what I hear. The Carolina Panthers at the Green Bay Packers in what looks to be the marquee game of the week. Cam Newton headed to IR, so Kyle Allen, this is your team for the remainder of the season. Packers are 5-point favorites in the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. Rams at the Steelers as the Steelers look to kind of salvage what's left of their season. Steelers getting 3.5 points at home as the Rams come in as road favorites. Vikings at the Cowboys in the Sunday nighter. Vikings need a win. Cowboys likewise in that tight NFC playoff picture. Cowboys are 2.5-point favorites in Jerry's world. And finally, the Monday nighter is an excellent one for a change. An excellent, excellent game for a change as the Seahawks travel to San Francisco and play the 49ers in the big pair of Levi's jeans. 49ers still undefeated, trying to go 9-0, our 6-point favorites at home against Russell and Bustle and the Seahawks.
I love it. I love it. That's probably the only game that I'm going to watch, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Just a Monday night. All right, Alex. I don't think we cover the last Road Dogs that we picked, but we kind of been on fire the entire season. So
even if we didn't, our MVP picks on the NBA pod are going to hit. So, yeah.
Boom.
Listen to that and get those in your back pocket. So even if we did lose the last Road Dogs, we're making everybody money. So I don't know what they're complaining about.
All right. Who do you have? Who's your Road Dog?
I mean, there's not a whole lot of good ones this week. Honestly, there's a lot of road favorites. You know, we kind of know at this point who the good teams are and who the bad teams are. There are a couple of cross-offs here and there. But one that popped out to me almost immediately was Cardinals at Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay, 4.5-point favorites. That's not a good Tampa Bay team. I know they just played the Seahawks tight, but part of that is that the Seahawks defense is not that good, not that the Buccaneers are that great. And, of course, with Jameis Winston as your quarterback, you're always – you always have the potential for a 6-turnover game somehow. And the Cardinals are not inept. Not completely, at least. So I expect them to keep that. Yeah, I expect them to keep that within a field goal at the very least and cover that 4.5-point spread, if not outright win. But I won't say that.
Well, there you go. That's awesome. The Lions going to Chicago. They're getting 2.5 points. I think they can easily cover that. I think they're going to win it outright. So I think the Bears' problems continue. Matt Stafford can spin the ball. He's going to have a tough time against the Bears defense, but I think they can win this game.
the Lions' record sort of renders them irrelevant in terms of teams will pay attention to, but their wide receiver core might be playing the best out of any three in the league.
Yeah, indeed. What else do we have to cover this week? Anything?
I don't believe so. We mentioned, you know, this was the last week that players could be designated to go to IR, so a couple of your fantasy favorites might not be coming back for the rest of this year. We mentioned Cam Newton, also DeSean Jackson, who made an appearance on an earlier pod, underwent abdominal surgery, so he's out for the remainder of the year, as well as a couple of defensive guys, Tremaine Jackson of the Jets, and then I think another safety somewhere else whose name I can't remember. But other than that, I think, like you said, there's only four games left in the fantasy season. We run through Thanksgiving and then the playoffs start, so keep your eyes on the waiver wire and perhaps you'll get lucky.
This is exciting. All right, thank you so much for tuning in today. I hope you guys had a good time with those new additions to our little lineup. We'll see if we'll bring it back, but we'll try to bring this back to you guys as soon as possible, hopefully next week. So enjoy week 10 and we'll talk to you later.
Peace.
Look, these divided times, so we got diverse opinions. Ain't nothing scripted, no intermission. Let's get the business. Touch any topic that ain't a subject that is off limits. You better listen. This Black and Yellow, Alex and Jimmy.
Black and yellow, black. Black and yellow, yellow, black. And yellow, black. Black and yellow, yellow, black. And yellow, black. Black and yellow, yellow, black. And yellow, black. Black and yellow, yellow.